Sangye chutam sogye cho nam la Chang chu bai du dag mi kya su chi Dagi jin sogye pi so nam gi Dro la bin ji songye dru par sho I go for refuge until I am enlightened. Through the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints, through the virtuous merits that I collect, by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened. Through the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints, through the virtuous merits that I collect, by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings never be separated from bliss which is sorrowless. May all dwell in equanimity, free from aversion and pain. The ground is covered with flowers and sprinkled with scented water. In the middle is Mount Meru, surrounded by the four continents, ornamented by the sun and the moon. By visualizing all this and offering it as a Buddha realm, all sentient beings partake of Buddha's pure land. Om Guru Buddha Bodhisattva Sapariwara Ratna Mandala Puza Mega Samudra Saparana Samaye Allah. Welcome back to the sixth session of Parting from the Four Attachments. Last week we started introducing some other commentaries, and so I thought I would just write down some of these names on the board just to have an idea of who all these folks are and when they lived and how they fit in the picture. Okay. So just kind of quickly run through this. Obviously we have Manjushri, the Buddha of Wisdom, who gave the transmission to Sachin Kunga Ningpo. And he had four sons, but two of the four sons are historically important. Drapa Gyaltsen, whose commentary we've used every week, his Song of Experience commentary. And he had a brother, Sonam Semo. And then Drapa Gyaltsen had a nephew, Sakyapandita, the famous Sakyapandita. And Sakyapandita had a nephew, Chogyapakpa. And these five are the five founders of the Sakya school. Okay. They're all connected, obviously, by family. And they all lived, you know, between 800 and 1,000 years ago, roughly. Then in the last 1,000 years, there have been a lot of commentaries that have been made by different masters over the centuries. And a couple of them that we've heard from and will be hearing from, Nochin Kunga Zongpo, who lived in the 14th and the 15th century, and Gorampa Sonam Senje, who lived in the 15th century. Nochin Kunga Zongpo was a famous Vajrayana master, and Gorampa Sonam Senje was a great scholar, philosophy master. Interestingly enough, Gorampa Sonam Senje was a reincarnation of Drapa Gyaltsen. And then we have a lot of contemporary commentaries that I have quoted from and will be quoting from, either written or oral. Some of these are written and some of them are given orally. So we have the 41st, 42nd, and the 43rd Sakyatrizans. And then we have His Eminence Abhikrita Rinpoche and His Eminence Asanga Rinpoche. These are also lineage holders that are in the Kun family, and probably eventually they will be Sakyatrizans because it's passed on in a 3-year term. But you have to go through the whole training program and be qualified. It's not enough to just be born in the family. Very extensive training and retreats. But they've given commentaries. And then Geshe Thashi Namgyal, our founder, Dzongtsa Kenzi Rinpoche, who's a famous Sakya Lama, and Lama Jampa Taye, who's another Sakya Lama. These are all contemporary teachers who have given commentaries that I've taken quotes from. So just to give you some idea of who these folks are and when they lived and what the connections are. Last week we talked about the Jessendrapa Gyaltsen commentary. We actually came to the end of the first line, the commentary on the first line, and at that point there was an interesting notation made by Sakyapandita, his nephew, about Drapa Gyaltsen's commentary. Because Drapa Gyaltsen's, it's a song of experience, it's kind of poetic in a way. It's not academic, you know, with lots of lists and numbers and things like some of them are. And if you say, well, how could the entire, you know, path be in just four lines? Well, these are pithy instructions that have to be explained by a master who has the insight in what the lines actually mean in their broader sense. And Sakyapandita's comment makes a great insight for all the commentators that followed. And I'll just read it again. We read this last week where he says, in reference to Drapa Gyaltsen's Song of Experience, Sakyapandita says, this shows directly the distinction between ultimate and relative aims. So in other words, between, you know, your impure worldly morality that we talked about and the pure morality that Drapa Gyaltsen talked about. So that's directly shown and talked about. But then Sakyapandita goes on to say, it indirectly indicates the manner of meditating upon the difficulty of obtaining the 18 prerequisites and the impermanence of life. So he's pointing to two other topics, the precious human rebirth topic that we talked about last week, and the impermanence topic, impermanence and death. And by pointing out that those are indirectly referenced in the Song of Experience by Drapa Gyaltsen, Sakyapandita sort of, it's like he laid out the map for the commentaries that followed. Because all those commentaries talk about these two indirect topics that are not specifically named. And so Sakyapandita, you know, is a famous great scholar and master. He saw into it in a sense, and he pointed the way for the rest of these commentaries. So last week we kind of shifted gears a little bit and went into the precious human rebirth topic in quite a bit of detail. Tonight we're going to go into the second of those topics, which is impermanence, the inevitability of death. So these are two meditation topics that we then take Drapa Gyaltsen's instructions about applying good moral conduct to listening, contemplating, and meditating these two topics, precious human rebirth and death and impermanence. So that's what we'll be doing tonight, the second of those, death and impermanence. It's called the second contemplation. So we'll be listening, contemplating, and meditating on impermanence and death. So that's where we are historically in the teaching. So Geshe Tashi Namgyal said, to ponder impermanence is to make a respectful offering to the Buddha. If life were permanent, it would be okay to be attached to this life. But it's not permanent. It's impermanent, uncertain, unreliable, and unstable. And there's no guarantee that we will obtain another precious human rebirth. The topic of impermanence and death has some discussion that have been laid out sort of systematically. And it has three subtopics or topics that are called the three roots. And then each of those three has three commentaries on it. And then at the end of all of that, there are three conclusions. So we're going to go step by step through the three roots, the nine considerations, and the three conclusions. Here we go. So the first root is the certainty of death. And then the subtopics or the considerations are, they're three in number. The first one is, no one in the past has ever escaped death. You can't name anybody historically. There's no possibility to escape death. Jesus died. Buddha passed away. And there's almost 8 billion people on the planet now, and 100 years from now, almost none of them will be alive. It's true that, technically speaking, we don't say that Buddha died because he's not subject to death. He has no more negative karma. So we say he passed away. We don't say he died. But he showed us how to die. He gave, his last teaching was he passed away and showed how to do it. There's a statue on the altar here where he's reclining like this. That's the posture that he taught, which is optimum for dying. If you get to your deathbed and you can, you lie on your right side, and it has to do with the energy flow, and you're stopping the discursive thinking, and you calm your mind, and you have a peaceful death. And then if you know death practices, then you can do those at that point too. The statue is a little bit inaccurate, because he's sort of propped up. It looks like he's watching Netflix or something. You know, he's not. He should be lying down. It's actually on your right side like this. But anyway, you see these reclining Buddha's statues sometimes. That's a reference to his passing away. It was an actual teaching that he gave, his final teaching. But in any case, nobody gets out alive. Death is just inevitable. There's no escape. You know, death and taxes. So that's the first consideration of the first root. The second consideration is that the body is compounded and bound to disintegrate. So compounded means that it's made up of components. You have the physical components, you know, your bones and your blood and your flesh and so on. And then the energetic components, your various energy systems and so on. But it's compounded, it's made up of pieces that come together, and there are some principles that apply to anything that's been compounded, and they are as follows. The end of accumulation is exhaustion. The end of gathering is separation. The end of ascent to the heights is descent to the depths. And the end of birth is death. So that's just a factual statement about how things are. And our body is subject to that, to those laws of compounded things disintegrate. Some faster, some slower, some we can see, some we don't see. The ones that we don't see, we tend to get attached to because we tend to project permanence onto them, but they're not. This table won't be here in 1,000 years, probably. So that's the second consideration. The third consideration is that life runs out second by second. So life has a limit, and each moment brings us closer to that finality. There is no human lifespan which has a definite fixed lifespan. In some realms, there are. There are beings in some realms where the lifespan is fixed and you know I'm going to live this long. We don't have that. We don't know. But what we do know is it's ticking away. The clock is ticking. We know there's a limit, but we don't know when. So that's the first root and the three considerations. Second root is, there's no certainty what will cause death and when it will come. The first consideration is that life is incredibly fragile. We don't know what will come first, our next breath or our next life. And in fact, the only thing that separates us from the next life is one breath. It's really fragile. It's like a bubble on the surface of water that can burst at any moment. We all probably know people that had sudden deaths, and it's that easy to die, you know. there's lots of ways to die, and it's fragile. So that's the first consideration. The second consideration is the body is without any enduring essence. So what that means is you can't find anything, you can't point to anything in the body that has an enduring essence. You can't say, oh, that's permanent, that piece is going to last forever. It doesn't work that way. As we said, our life is just running out second by second. In fact, we're dying from the moment that we are conceived. And there is nothing that you can point to that contradicts that. You can't say, oh, well, yeah, but that part is permanent. It doesn't work that way. Geshe Thashi Namgyal said, and he quotes Shantideva, he says, Shantideva said to take the scalpel of your intellect and investigate what is your body. It's skin and bones and marrow, etc., but there is no essence. There are just a bunch of parts that rely on each other, but there is no final essence. It's a moving piece. Garampa Sonam Senje said, I must part from attachment to this life, since this is the chief method for causing the mind to proceed toward the Dharma. Even now, when eating good food and wearing good clothes, I must meditate on the thought, now it is like this, but someday I shall be separated from this life, and I will have to go alone. All these things are without essence. They are worthless. And then the third consideration is that there are numerous circumstances that can cause death, while there are few circumstances that prolong or support life. Now, this refers to the weakness and the fragility of the physical body, which contributes to life's uncertainty. There are few circumstances that prolong or support life, and there are many causes and conditions that can lead to death. Even food, water, medicine, etc., can cause death. Circumstances can kill us. Some people die even before they're born. The young can die before the old, the healthy can die before the sick, and the rich can die before the poor, and so on. It's completely uncertain. And then the third route is anything other than Dharma is totally useless at the moment of death. And the first consideration is your relatives, your friends, your status, your power, your position in society will be of no use at the moment of death. Not being a great speaker, not being beautiful, none of your employees, not your fame, none of that can help you. The second consideration is that wealth and material possessions will be of no use. It's the famous, you can't take it with you. And in fact, they don't even delay your death. And the third consideration is that even your own body will be of no use at the time of death. And again, you can't take it with you. So no matter what kind of body you have or had, when it comes time for death, it's not of any use to you. Geshe Tashi Namgyal said, we tend to be attached to our own body, but the body doesn't go to the next life. Our mind goes with all of our positive and negative karmic propensities. Therefore, it's better to focus on spirituality. So those are the three roots and the nine commentaries or considerations. And now we come to the three definite conclusions out of all of this. So the first conclusion is we should practice Dharma because it's the only thing that will definitely help us at death. And this means that the only thing that will help us at the time of death is our spiritual development, because the only thing that goes on to the next life is our mind stream with its positive and negative karmic imprints. So in other words, whatever karma you've created up to that point goes with you, everything else doesn't. So that's why it's important to focus on that. The worldly possessions, wealth, position, money can't help. Relatives and friends can neither prevent death nor go with us. And even our own precious bodies have no help to us. We have to leave it behind like a shell, like an empty husk, or an overcoat. We must let go of those things and people to which we are attached and practice Dharma. The second consideration is we must practice Dharma right now, since we don't know when we're going to die. And that says that any kind of procrastination, such as I'll do it tomorrow, I'll do it later, I'll practice when I retire, is risky, foolish, and unwise. Geshe Tashi Namgyal said, if we wait for a better time, we will lose our present precious human rebirth. Worldly accomplishments like wealth and so on have to be regained every lifetime, but spiritual accomplishments go with us, and in that sense they are lasting. Therefore, we must practice the Dharma immediately without delay, and you won't regret it. We will be happy because we know our life was well spent, and we will have a good rebirth. The Dalai Lama said, a good Dharma practitioner is happy to die like a person escaping from a burning house. The third consideration is we should devote our time exclusively to practicing Dharma because nothing else is of any use. We need to let go of our worldly attachments and distractions, of which there are many. And we need to devote our time to practice, remembering that being busy is a distraction, which is a form of laziness, the laziness of busyness. Geshe Tashi Namgyal said, our future lives' happiness depends on how we look at things now. Being aware of impermanence is extremely beneficial. Also, how we experience the world now depends on our attitude, our mind. As much as we are in harmony with impermanence, we will be happy. As much as we grasp at permanence, we will feel angry, frustrated, or agitated that things happen that we don't like. You ever felt frustrated? I don't like it. Dzogchen Khenzi Rinpoche said, giving up attachment to this life is not as simple as giving up a job, family, and possessions. Anytime we feather our nest to make it more comfortable, anytime we fortify our nest, that expresses attachment to this life. And just because we shave our head to become a nun or a monk does not mean we automatically abandon all our attachments to this life. Our hair and our attachments are like apples and oranges. Most of us lose our hair sooner or later, yet our attachment to this life still persists. There's a story about this. There's a famous Indian guru who was responsible for a lot of the Dharma being transmitted into Tibet. His name was Atisha. He had a lot of students, and one day he saw one of his students was practicing the Dharma. He was circumambulating a holy object. And Atisha went up to his student and he said, "Well, that's nice, but you should practice Dharma." And the student was kind of surprised because he thought he was practicing Dharma. And so he was like, okay, I guess I'm not supposed to do circumambulation. So he started saying mantras. So he's saying mantras, and then later on Atisha sees him saying the mantras and he says, "Well, that's nice, but you should practice Dharma." So the student's going, "Well, oh man, I don't know." So he goes off and he starts doing another practice, and the answer is still the same. Atisha comes and says, "Well, that's nice, but you should practice Dharma." And he just kept getting the same advice, but the student just got more and more confused. And so finally the student gave up and he said, "You keep telling me I should practice Dharma, but no matter what I do, but if none of these methods are practicing Dharma, then what is it that I should do?" And Atisha said, "Give up concerns for this life." This reflects back to the very beginning of Drapa Gyaltsen's commentary, where he kind of warns us. He says, you know, you can think you'd be practicing Dharma, but if you're not careful, you're not really. If you're doing it with even a smidgen of worldly motivation, it's not pure practice. Dzogchen Khenzi Rinpoche said, "One of the main reasons we practice Dharma is to prepare ourselves for certain death. For some, it's the only reason they practice. But that reason alone will make their Dharma practice worthwhile. These days, various aspects of the Dharma, like mindfulness, are becoming more and more popular, but rarely as a preparation for death, and definitely not as a preparation for what lies beyond death. Modern people meditate for every reason under the sun except the most important one. How many Vipassana students meditate to prepare for death? And how many practice because they want to put an end to the cycle of death and rebirth for good? Most people meditate because they want to become better managers or find partners or feel happy, or because they long for a calm, stress-free mind and life. For them, meditation is a way of preparing for life, not death, and is therefore no less mundane than their other worldly pursuits like shopping, eating out, exercising, and socializing." Geshe Tashi Namgyel said, "Worldly activity interferes with our spiritual practice. Attachment to our body, our worldly activities, etc., are based on attachment to self-grasping, and our attachments are generated from that. If we have less attachment, we will have more time and energy for our practice. Laziness, for example, I'll have time to practice later, is based on self-grasping. Laziness is something we have to deal with when we don't accomplish what we would like to. Laziness is linked to the idea that things are permanent. We think we have a long duration and that things are reliable. So our attitude is, oh, we can be lazy. We think we have lots of time to accomplish whatever we would like to. But if we appreciate impermanence, we have lots of energy and enthusiasm to accomplish what we want. We realize we need to take advantage of the moment. We need to develop a deep understanding of impermanence, which stops attachment. We shouldn't focus on the outside world. We should focus on our inner attitude. If we have a bad attitude with very strong self-grasping, things could be difficult. However, now we have a warm, strong familiarity with the false idea that our world is permanent and stable. We see the world in the wrong way. We think it's stable. But in fact, it will definitely change and end. Even our thoughts are impermanent, as are the seasons and time. One of our principal attachments is to beings, but we have an extreme attachment to our body. We need to become more conscious of impermanence. And don't just think about it. We need to make it a part of our lives, because we are unrealistic. We need to stop thinking the way that we do, and we need to readjust and take a more realistic view. That was Geshe Tashi Namgyo. Tsongtsar Jungang Khyentse said, "Our lives have no outcome other than death, just as rivers have no end other than the ocean. And at the moment of death, our only recourse is spiritual practice, and our only friends, the virtuous action we have accomplished during our lifetime." His Eminence Chogyi Trichen Rinpoche said, "To succeed in meditation practice, it's necessary not to delay the pursuit of meditation, and not to procrastinate in any way. This life is perishable, it is fragile, and it may collapse at any moment. You can train yourself by thinking, since everything is impermanent and transient, so is my precious human life. And while I have this temporary opportunity, I will practice diligently without procrastinating or making any excuses." In this way, a special enthusiasm, virtually impossible to acquire from outside of ourselves, can be generated. This comes about through reflecting on these topics and on the necessity of clarifying one's motives for practicing meditation. This trinity of factors, conduct, study, and meditation, should go hand in hand with one another. Our practice should not involve just one or two of these aspects. It is the tradition of our lineage that when teachings of this nature are imparted, this is not merely left as a teaching, but is followed by reflective meditation. And this is done in order to plant the teachings in our being as seeds of meditative realization. We should deeply feel the teaching at the time of hearing them, reflect on them, And then try to gain some realization of them in our sessions of meditation. Nochen Kunga Zangpo said, at the time of death, nothing besides Dharma can help. Therefore, by practicing Dharma for as long as you are alive, you will not have regret at the time of death. You will be happy, since you will be confident that you will be born in a good place. So, decisively practice the holy Dharma. Since the time of death is uncertain, meditate upon the idea of the need to practice Dharma immediately. His Eminence Avikrita Rinpoche, who's a young Lama, just this past week published a commentary on Parting from the Four Attachments. Wow. Of course, I got it and read it, and he has a sort of a summary in his commentary, which is relevant at this point. And he quotes a couple of other people in his summary. The first one that he quotes is Gorampa Sonon Senjay, who said, the body that supports the accomplishment of the holy Dharma is difficult to obtain. Its nature impermanent and swift to decay. Fully realizing that, one takes responsibility assiduously to adopt virtue and abandon degradations, which constitutes the first stage. The first stage meaning the first line of Parting from the Four Attachments. And then Abhikrita Rinpoche quotes Sakya Pandita, who said, since this life is like a bubble in water and the time of death is uncertain, clinging to it is futile. And then finally, Avikrita Rinpoche says, arouse enthusiasm by reflecting on the outcome of the meditation as stated by Sakya Pandita, which is, not clinging to this very life, there will be no more birth in bad destinations. So that's the topic of death and impermanence, with various commentators' points of view. Any questions about this? It's kind of undeniable, isn't it? But if you ask people, this is just my comment now. If you ask people, are you going to die? They'll say, well, yeah, sure, of course. But if you look at how people lead their lives, they don't lead their lives like they believe that. They don't, you know, they're always making plans, and for sure it's going to be this way and that way, and then we get attached to the plans and the people and our lives and our stuff and everything. So it's one thing to pay lip service to it. Yeah, of course we're going to die. Really? How come you're living that way? You know, we really need to take a look at what our priorities are. Are we really making our priorities what they should be?
I think it's because most people don't think that there will be an afterlife. Like, I think they think this life is it. And that they don't understand or know that they're gonna, that whatever you cultivate spiritually, you can take that with you. They don't think that. Like, this is it.
Most people don't think there's an afterlife?
I don't think they think that whatever they cultivate spiritually now, they're gonna take with.
Yeah.
So when they say, yeah, I'm gonna die, it's like, so what? Like, there's nothing much after this. So they don't think about it. There's no point.
Yeah. But even if there were no afterlife, you know, the fundamental question is, what causes happiness and what causes suffering? And most people don't even have that straight. You know, most people don't realize that happiness is caused by altruism and suffering is caused by self-cherishing. Most people are looking out for number one, trying to accumulate material goods. Maybe they have a family life. But there's a pretty big gap there, even if you don't believe in an afterlife. Let's do a meditation on this. Get my trusty timer going here.
Can I take a picture of that board?
Okay. So take a moment to find a posture that's comfortable for you. Just let your mind relax and let all the thoughts just dissolve on their own. And we'll come into this moment about the teaching we just heard about death and impermanence. And just remind ourselves what we already know, which is death is inevitable. But we really don't know when or how. And also to remind ourselves about, well, what is important with this life that I have, which is so precious. And what are my priorities? Are my priorities in the right order? Or am I caught up in my daily living and my attachments to my life and the people that are in it? And just take a moment to remind ourselves that when the moment of death does come, that none of the worldly pursuits and accomplishments and accumulations will have any value at that point, because we can't take them with us to our next life. What is of value is our spiritual practice and the good karma that we have accumulated, which will go with us. And so, if that being the case, we need to realize the importance of practicing now while we have this opportunity to make our life meaningful and to have a peaceful death. Like escaping a burning house, as the Dalai Lama said. so nan de tan cha zi pa ni to na ni pe da nam je te ke ga na ji ba lung tu pe si ti so le do wa du wa shu jang ju zem jo rin po je ma ke pa nam ke ju je ke ma nam ba me pa nyo gong ne gong tu pya par shu jang pa pa wa ji tar ken pa dang kun du sang po de yang de jin te de da kung gi je su da lu che ge wa di da tang je ra du ngu du su je bi ga wa tang je ki no wa gang wa cho tu na pa gi Akshene wa tse wa di kun kyan Sang po cho chi rab du ngô war gi Chak sa wa dang cho ching shak pa dang Jesu yi rang ku shing so wa yi Gewa chung ze da gi ji sa pa Tam je zo pe jang chu chi By the Spirit, may all attain omniscience, may defeat the enemy wrongdoing. From the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death, from the ocean of samsara, may all beings be free. Bodhicitta is precious. May it arise in all beings in whom it has not arisen. May it never decline where it has arisen. May it ever grow and flourish. In whatever way valiant Manjushri and Samantabhadra know how to transfer merit, so do I dedicate all my own virtues that I might train to be like them. Through this dedication, praised as supreme by the victorious Buddhas of the past, present, and future, I, together with all sentient beings, dedicate these roots of virtue to attaining Buddhahood. May whatever little virtue I may have gained from prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, requesting, and beseeching be dedicated to attaining perfect enlightenment. Thank you.
Thank you.